brother! As y'all may be aware, Jay and I have a new podcast where we're reading through each chapter of the Harry Potter saga one by one and carefully dissecting nearly every sentence of the story. And one thing that has started to blow my mind when you look at this story on such a granular level is how much planning went into constructing the endgame so early on. For example, in Chamber of Secrets, it may seem convenient that Harry just won't throw Tom Riddle's diary away. After all, it's just some random empty book he found waterlogged in Moaning Myrtle's bathroom. But then you get this paragraph. Harry couldn't explain even to himself why he didn't just throw Riddle's diary away. The fact was that even though he knew the diary was blank, he kept absentmindedly picking it up and turning the pages as though it were a story he wanted to finish. And while Harry was sure he'd never heard the name T.M. Riddle before, it still seemed to mean something to him, almost as though Riddle was a friend he'd had when he was very small and had half forgotten. But this was absurd. He'd never had friends before Hogwarts. Dudley had made sure of that. Love the little slight at Dudley there right at the end. But it's clearly the piece of Voldemort's soul living inside of Harry that's causing him to feel this pull towards yet another piece. But for quite some time now, we here at SCB have struggled with one detail in particular that seems wildly out of place. It doesn't seem to fit once you learn more about the bigger picture. And that is the magical eye of Alistair Moody. Now, while I have zero issues thinking someone of Mad-Eye's eccentricities, paranoia, and constant vigilance, having a special way of examining every room and space he enters, there is one ability that seems to take it just a little too far.
Nice cloak, Potter.
Harry stared at him in amazement. The large chunk missing from Moody's nose was particularly obvious at a few inches distance. Moody grinned. Can you?
Yeah, it can see through invisibility cloaks, Moody said quietly, and it's come in useful at times, I can tell you.
And we know within the saga that Harry isn't the only person to have an invisibility cloak at all, as some are the products of disillusionment charms, while others are made of demiguy's hair. But Harry's isn't like that. It's literally a Deathly Hallow, one of a kind, and it has survived centuries without fading or wearing in any capacity. It's perfect. So Mad-Eye's ability to see through it begins to beg a larger question, like what or possibly who made it and why did they make it? And the good news is, we might just have an answer. Let's dive on in.
Hey, brother!
Okay, so it's right there in his name. Mad-Eye Moody. It's sort of his signature characteristic, and yet we also know that Moody hasn't always had it. This discovery is made by Harry himself when he enters the Pensieve in Dumbledore's office during Goblet of Fire. Mad-Eye Moody was sitting there, except that there was a very noticeable difference in his appearance. He did not have his magical eye, but two normal ones. Both were looking down upon Karkaroff, and both were narrowed in intense dislike. So we know that this scene is taking place during the First Wizarding War, and in this scene, tensions are high. But then as the Pensieve does, it remorphs to display a new scene. And then the dungeon returned. Harry was sitting in a different seat, still on the highest bench, but now to the left of Mr. Crouch. The atmosphere seemed quite different, relaxed, even cheerful. We've now made it past the downfall of Voldemort after his attack on the Potters, and this is when we get a glimpse at like Ludo Bagman being on trial, which is largely irrelevant to the scene, but more critical is one, who else is there, and two, who else isn't? Because after Ludo Bagman is Bellatrix and Rodolphus Lestrange alongside a straw-haired boy who we will learn is Barty Crouch Jr., who are on trial for the torture of Neville's parents, Frank and Alice Longbottom. We know that this is really the last horrific act of the First Wizarding War on behalf of the Death Eaters, and actually takes place after Voldemort's own downfall. The reason they're torturing them is because they believe the Longbottoms know Voldemort's location, which obviously, like everyone else, they don't. The point is, though, Mad-Eye is a member of the Order of the Phoenix and has been present for hearings in the past, where, again, both eyes are still intact, but isn't there for this scene. And I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility at all that Mad-Eye himself was involved with the break-in and capture of these four Death Eaters, but was seriously injured in the process. And you might be thinking, well, Ben, that's a bit of a leap, but I don't actually think it is. The Order of the Phoenix was a fairly small organization on the whole, and just take a look at the members who made it out of the First Wizarding War. All of the Marauders have been thrown to the wind. Sirius is in Azkaban, Peter has betrayed everyone, Lupin is underground, and James is dead along with Lily. Then we actually learn from Moody himself that Molly's brothers, Fabian and Gideon, died fighting away a group of five Death Eaters. Marlene McKinnon was killed 2 weeks after the original Order of the Phoenix photo was taken. Caradoc Dearborn vanished. Edgar Bones, Benji Fenwick, Dorcas Meadows, on and on and on. All missing. Then you've got Frank and Alice Longbottom, who were the victims of the situation in question, and we know what happened to them. It basically leaves Dumbledore, Aberforth, Sturgis Podmore, Daedalus Diggle, Elpheus Doge, Hagrid, and Moody himself. Also, actually, I forgot Mrs. Fig, but I don't think she helped.
One of them was very large, and the other rather skinny.
Not the boys. The Dementors.
But while it wouldn't surprise me if Dumbledore was involved, Mad-Eye is the one we know to have taken massive damage somewhere during the events of the war, and for all intents and purposes, after Voldemort's downfall, the Wizarding World is existing in a general state of peace. Also not for nothing, but Bellatrix Lestrange and Barty Crouch Jr. are arguably Voldemort's most capable followers, and I don't suspect they went down without putting up a massive fight first. So then you might find yourself wondering, other than maybe like why Moody may have needed a new eye, what does this information actually tell us? Well, this is where we step into a degree of guesswork, but I'd argue we have considerable backing for everything that comes next, so stick with me. We know, for example, that Dumbledore trusts Hagrid with his life.
I would trust Hagrid with my life.
See? This dates back even earlier than the First Order of the Phoenix to the days of Grindelwald and his rise to power. But we here at SCB have long believed that similar to Newt Scamander in his relationship with magical beasts, Hagrid himself would also play quite a large role in the ultimate downfall of Gellert Grindelwald. And the reason for that is the timing in particular. The Chamber of Secrets was opened for the first time 50 years prior to Harry's time at school. Harry's second year takes place in 1992, meaning 50 years prior would be the year 1942. And Hagrid is of course accused of opening the chamber, is expelled from school, and has his wand snapped in half. Something we know from Harry's experience with his broken Holly wand cannot be repaired in any way other than thanks to the unique powers of the Elder Wand. The very same Elder Wand that Dumbledore would win from Grindelwald just 3 years later, and as a gesture of gratitude for Hagrid's involvement in taking him down, uses the newly won Elder Wand to repair Hagrid's wand. But guys, before we continue, we need to take a brief pause right there to give a huge thank you to today's sponsor, BetterHelp. Anyone ever had that conversation about introverts and extroverts? Introverts recharge alone while extroverts recharge around others? Well, for me, in most instances, I'm an extrovert. I'm very aware that being alone all day can leave me feeling exhausted, but without fail, there will be occasions where I'm out and around other people, and by the time I leave, I am feeling drained. But that's not supposed to happen, right? Like, people are my happy place, but not always. And this took quite a while for me to figure out in therapy, but has become an excellent barometer for who I need to maintain certain boundaries with. Who brings me energy and who is taking from my social battery? And identifying and regulating this kind of interaction are key skills that you too can learn in therapy. So if you're thinking about trying it out, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/super today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/super. Link in the description down below. And so you might be thinking, Ben, love that for Hagrid, but how do we bring this back to Moody and his eye? And my thinking is this. By the end of the First Wizarding War, the Order of the Phoenix has fought valiantly, but is in absolute shambles when Frank and Alice Longbottom are taken and tortured. Moody is essential in their recovery and the capture of Bellatrix, Barty Crouch Jr., and others, but is terribly wounded in the process, namely, missing an eye, hence why he's not present for their trial. So, as a token of Dumbledore's gratitude, and again, stick with me, I think Dumbledore himself creates Moody's magical eye. Because, here's the thing. Dumbledore, in King's Cross Station, talks to Harry about the Deathly Hallows, and the Peverell brothers in particular, and while he knows the Hallows exist, he isn't sold on the idea that they were actual gifts from death. So, it's true? Asked Harry. All of it? The Peverell brothers? Were the three brothers of the tale? Said Dumbledore, nodding. Oh, yes, I think so. Whether they met death on a lonely road, I think it more likely that the Peverell brothers were simply gifted, dangerous wizards who succeeded in creating those powerful objects. The story of them being death's own hallows seems to me the sort of legend that might have sprung up around such creations. I tend to believe this assessment, especially since Dumbledore has literally only just said this line as well. And you knew this? You knew all along?
I guessed, but my guesses have usually been good, said Dumbledore happily.
I also think Dumbledore has at least some basis for this assessment. He himself is a magical inventor. At bare minimum, we know of one extremely important invention, the Deluminator. It's the actual first piece of magic we see in the whole series. And here's what Scrimgeour has to say about it.
That is a valuable object, said Scrimgeour, watching Ron. It may even be unique. Certainly, it is of Dumbledore's own design. Why would he have left you an item so rare?
Now, we've gone in depth in the past about the Deluminator, but the ability to turn out lights within the wizarding world shy of Nox, which is specifically a counterspell to Lumos, is very unique. In fact, Moody himself actually borrows the Deluminator the first time he brings Harry to Grimmauld Place.
Got it, he clicked the unlighter again. The next lamp went out. Borrowed it from Dumbledore, growled Moody, pocketing the put-outer.
Two key points. One, this is a group of highly skilled aurors and wizards, and they still need the device to perform this particular task. And two, Dumbledore entrusts Moody with it. But we also know from Fantastic Beasts that Dumbledore has had the Deluminator long before he ever possesses the Elder Wand. However, turning out lights is not the only unique ability this device has. Ron is also able to use the device to return to Harry and Hermione after they've said his name. And that ability feels far more complex and unique than just simply turning out the lights, and possibly is closer to the realm of magic only possible thanks to the Elder Wand, and therefore maybe was added to the device later. And again, I know that feels like quite the detour, but not to worry, we're getting back to Moody's eye, which in addition to being able to see through objects, has another chief characteristic, namely that it's electric blue. And boy howdy, why does that sound familiar? Bright blue eyes capable of seeing through objects?
Dumbledore was giving Harry a searching look. His twinkling light blue gaze made Harry feel as though he were being X-rayed.
This exact phrasing is used over and over again throughout the story. For someone who requires half-moon spectacles, Dumbledore sure does seem to have extraordinary vision. So extraordinary, in fact, that I believe there is a chance that Dumbledore himself is capable of seeing through Harry's invisibility cloak. This is when Harry and Ron are hiding under the cloak in Hagrid's hut when they're down to ask him about the Chamber of Secrets. Dumbledore had not taken his bright blue eyes off Lucius Malfoy's cold gray ones.
However, said Dumbledore, speaking very slowly and clearly so that none of them could miss a word, you will find that I will only have truly left this school when none here are loyal to me. You will also find that help will always be given at Hogwarts to those who ask for it.
For a second, Harry was almost sure Dumbledore's eyes flickered toward the corner where he and Ron stood hidden. So, we have the bright, blue-eyed wizard of the century, who is known to invent powerful magical objects, actively in possession of the Elder Wand, can himself also see through Harry's cloak, and has good reason to provide support to those who have shown him tremendous loyalty. Therefore, I personally believe Dumbledore created and gifted Mad-Eye's eye. Heck, not only did he create it, but did so with the Elder Wand, which is one of the Deathly Hallows, and honestly makes me feel a little bit better then about the eye's ability to see through the invisibility cloak. Plus, not for nothing, but Harry ends the story as the master of all three Deathly Hallows, but also goes about possibly being the master of the eye by the end as well, or at least gives it the respect it deserves. After the Battle of the Seven Potters, when Moody is killed, it is eventually revealed that Umbridge is the one who ends up with the eye and is using it on her door to spy on her employees. But Harry steals it from her and goes about burying it, putting it to rest in front of the largest and most gnarled tree he can find. Early the next morning, before the other two were awake, Harry left the tent to search the woods around them for the oldest, most gnarled and resilient-looking tree he could find. There, in its shadow, he buried Mad-Eye Moody's eye and marked the spot by gouging a small cross in the bark with his wand. It was not much, but Harry felt that Mad-Eye would have much preferred this to being stuck on Dolores Umbridge's door. Master of the Eye? Good enough for me. Honestly, when you think about it, it's not terribly dissimilar to what he even does with the Resurrection Stone. Like, Harry's version of hiding it is just dropping it in the woods. But also, just as another interesting aside, if this is the correct series of events, it would also mean that Barty Crouch Jr. and Moody go way back, and his usage of Moody's eye for an entire year is even worse because he's the reason the eye was needed in the first place. There you go, guys. Moody's eye being able to see through Harry's cloak has always been something that has driven us nuts here at Super Carlin Brothers, but this actually fits together using a series of events that absolutely exist inside of the story already, and nothing feels like a tremendous leap to me. Let me know your thoughts in the towel section down below. As ever, thank you so much for watching. Be sure to like this video and subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. If you'd like to check out that podcast I mentioned in the opener, you can do so right over here. It's called Through the Gryffindor. We're almost all the way through Chamber of the Secrets. It has been so much fun, and we're also going on tour. So if you want to go and see a live version of the show, you can do so by checking out the links in the description down below. Otherwise, until next time, bye!